previously.tv podcast network.
I think birthday portraits should evolve and mature with age. Like the subject, show change in the character. Complexity, reality. No one wants complexity in reality from us. Do sit down.
This is the Extra Hot Grape Podcast, episode 182 for the week of December 11th, 2017. I am modern photographer David T. Cole, and I'm here with tiresome protocol Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Your Grace.
Stag assassin Tara Ariano.
I didn't just miss your heart.
Pearl necklace Heather Cox.
I think that joke speaks for itself.
And uptight cashmere cardigan Jessica Morgan.
Pip pip cheerio.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great. Joining us once again are our friends from Go Fug Yourself, Heather Cox and Jessica Morgan. Hello.
Hello.
Yay!
Hello. Hello. I suppose we don't need to do full site business because our Indiegogo campaign is now over. It did get fully funded, I think, before we did our last episode of Extra Hot Great. So thank you to everyone who backed it and who shared it and who helped us get to the point where we are today, which is Heather and Jessica doing epic old school recaps of The Crown, which you're here to talk about today. In addition to Happy, which we will get to as well, we're doing a classy and crude kind of thing with The Crown on Netflix, season two having just dropped, and Happy on Sci-Fi. Let us start with The Crown. It was very hard for me to watch all of season two, which Dave and I did this weekend, without having your all recaps going through my head, which is not a bad thing, but I kept interrupting to be like, Heather said about this scene, the blah, blah, blah. I have really enjoyed having your perspective on it because you guys know so much about royalty. You're super duper smart. But let's start with what it does wrong, which is too much Philip. Jessica, take it from there.
Oh my God. There's so much Philip. I think it's the most frustrating thing about this show that I feel like Peter Morgan is really interested in like Philip's sad man tears and all of his like baby feelings, and is not at all interested in the inner life of, you know, the queen, aka the crown herself. Like it's very frustrating to me that I just over the course of a season and a half, because I've only watched the first six episodes of season two, it just seems really clear to me that he's not that interested in women. It's a shame.
Unless they're really damaged, like Princess Margaret, who is fascinating and difficult and challenging and troubled. And I think he seems to have no problem tucking into her. But when it comes to somebody like the queen, he just doesn't seem to have any interest in digging in and trying to find something about her. Instead, he just seems to focus on how she sort of muddies the waters for other people, which seems a little off balance to me. And I do think it's possible she is not the most interesting person in her circle or in her family or whatever. And there's certainly plenty of juice in there. But I think if you want to do a show about the crown, it's very difficult to make it so impersonal about the person who wears it.
Also, it's fiction. Like, make some stuff up. You know?
Right?
Yeah, I wonder if that's their difficulty, is that she is still living and she is quite beloved, and they're concerned that if they take liberties that it will be, I mean, it's not like they need Buckingham Palace's cooperation to continue or anything like that, but I'm wondering if there's some trepidation about going there in certain ways with her. But while I watched the whole season and I liked it, but my frustration wasn't even with like Philip's man tears and Philip's beard of sadness, and I mean, there was a lot of that, and there was also kind of a little bit too much like fetishizing of Margaret's drunken sulking also, because like you said, it's like they're exploring all these other people instead, and then occasionally having them bounce off the like opaque exterior of Lilibet, which I think is kind of a cheap way out of exploring her. Maybe there's just not much there, like you said, but they might have tried.
I agree. I feel like there has to be something there. And sometimes they will flirt with stuff that's there. Like, for example, in the episode where it touches on her obvious Christianity and her belief in that and how important that is to her, that might have been cool, but they haven't carried that through really the whole series. So it comes out of nowhere and it exists solely to give context to a story about her uncle. And I don't understand why that couldn't give more context to stories about her.
The thing that I think they do that's also a little absurd to me is that they'll take interesting conflict of which she is a center and they will play it off screen or they'll have someone tell someone else about it. I'm thinking of an episode where Philip is talking to terrible Australian Mike about how Elizabeth wants to have more children. And, you know, Heather and I talked about this in our recaps, but also to each other at length. It was like, why are we not seeing that conversation between Elizabeth and Philip where she wants more kids to save the marriage? Like, that's juicy. Why are you not mining that? Why is this happening between Philip and a totally unrelated person? It just seems to me that he likes to do stuff off camera that is very unsatisfying handled in that manner.
I have also thought, well, maybe it's because she's still alive and they're worried about, you know, offending someone, something, I don't know. But then I keep coming back to that episode in season one where they presumably fictionalized Philip basically snapping his fingers and suggesting she give him a blowy. And I'm like, okay, well, if you're willing to do that, how about some inner life? I don't know. It's not such a crazy idea.
Can we just pause for a moment and just relish the term blowy?
You're welcome.
The royal blowy.
Yeah. The royal blowy. I think the royal blowy is the title of our next book.
Oh my gosh. Our agent will be thrilled.
Finally.
Yes. I know, right? That's
it, what everyone wanted. It definitely does feel, though, like he, Peter Morgan, who created the show and mostly writes it sometimes with collaborators, but he it does feel like he has a sense of relief when he can turn his lens away from Elizabeth. And I definitely did. I agree that the two big Margaret episodes, which are episode four. And I think episode seven, the show comes so much more alive when she's at the center. And like, she has such a sexier, more like glamorous, you know, late '50s/sixties story to tell. Like, it just makes me wonder, like, why not make a show about her? And I mean, I guess maybe people don't know enough about her life, but those episodes crackle so much more to me.
Well, and I think if the idea is that, you know, maybe Margaret to some degree had the freedom to have a sexier and darker life, that is something that he could use to inform his current main character, because that has to have an effect on her in some way. Like, she's looking at her sister having the life. Like, does she wish that she could sort of blow off some steam in that way sometimes? Like, how does it, that goes both ways. And then the other thing that he never really established was a relationship between the two of them. Like, we've never, from the beginning of season one, they kind of skimped on, well, were the sisters close? What are the stakes here? And like you said, he just sort of seems to drop in and out like a tourist of these, and it's, he's not giving you a sense of the full tapestry.
When I was watching season two, I was struck by how, at least public perception, what we get from the royal family is basically a series of PR opportunities and disasters. Like, that is, when you boil down the crown, that's what it is. It's just PR move after PR move, reacting to things that are both positive in their lives and then things that are challenging. And in that way, it really reminded me of Mad Men, except that Don Draper isn't the lead character. He is, you know, the male lead, Neo, rather than being the lead. But it really kind of, like, when you reduce it to that, the Crown is about PR, where Mad Men is about advertising slogans. And in season two, it becomes more similar, I thought, than maybe season one. And like, season one had its moments where it was this moment in history through the prism of the royal reaction. But season two seemed to be, every episode was on that continuum, and it just seemed to be very reactive and episodic rather than sort of a 8-10 hour movie, you know, which I thought season one felt more, had more of a flow to it.
Yeah, their episodic nature of the show makes me a little bit crazy. Like, I find it, I get that this is what he's doing. And I think some of the truth is just that this is not the way I would do the show if I were him. But the fact that they have a tendency to anything that is sort of a through line, they will bring it up and then you won't hear about it again for like 3 more hours drives me bonkers. Like, what is going on with Margaret and Matthew Good? Like, I want to see that happen next, but no, we're going to have to go talk about, like, this bad speech the queen gave that this guy heard at the dentist's office. Like,
Matthew Good is busy having sex with Jackie Chan.
Well, I would I would like to see everything Matthew Good is up to on a like a continual, like a continuum. But I mean, yeah. this is just how the show is set up. But I find it a little, I think it kind of gets in the way of you emotionally investing in the characters if you never really have like a through plot line for a season. Like a real plot line. Like an actual plot, not like we're going to be exploring such and so.
It becomes a show about events rather than a show about people. And that's kind of what everything seems now to be framed in, something that they found on like a Wikipedia deep dive. Like, oh, remember that time Billy Graham came to the Buckingham Palace? That was interesting. What can we do with that? Or, you know, and it's again, the people that they've fleshed out the most are the people where there was the most material there for them, you know, like Edward and Margaret, and everyone else is just sort of flitting around. You know, depending on, it's all based on like, what is Michael Adeen going to tell us this time? Like, what's in the papers this morning?
Well, and that portrayal of the Windsors is excellent. Like, there are certain characters that are very compelling, and I don't have a problem with their looking away from Elizabeth to give her some context sometimes. Like, but I also think compared to season one, like, because her parents aren't as much in the foreground, I mean, you know, when I saw Jared Harris in the credits in one episode, I was like, oh, thank God he's back, because I just thought he was so charming in this role. And then he gets a line. But the Queen Mother, I forget which one of you said in a recap that she's a little inconsistent.
Well, Heather,
mm-hmm.
although I agree.
Yeah, that it's like sometimes she's ditzy and sometimes she's, you know, very, like in a very British way, but shade throwing for days, which is more what she was in the last season. And the way that she relates to her daughters, and particularly the ways in which she's shitty to Margaret, but also shitty to Elizabeth. And like, don't these sisters ever talk about their mother being shitty?
Exactly.
Because siblings talk about the shittiness of their parents. Yes. It's like, oh.
Even when they're not getting along with each other.
Yeah.
That's something that you haven't got.
Exactly. Yes. That it's like, look, you know, not that she doesn't have a point, but today in Queen Mum shittiness, what did she say to you about this?
Right?
But
yeah.
Yeah. And they're also quite interested, the show, I think, in like, they're fascinated by Margaret, but they also want her to eat shit. And there's something about the way that she's portrayed that is like, and like, I would also file with that the number of non-loving shots of Elizabeth in mumsy 90s lotioning her face, that it's like, okay,
oh
we get
God,
it.
Right?
She's a Dowd. You're better than everybody. Fuck off.
She's like Deborah Barone. I know. It's so sad.
It is a little unfortunate. I just sort of get the impression that this show is not ultimately that interested in like the private lives of women.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I think you'd see a lot more conversations between Margaret and Elizabeth, or, you know, any number of women. But it's very, very rare. And, you know, if we're going to get Philip talking to stupid Mike about like the fact that he's going to have another baby, you made the decision to have that discussion between two men, one of whom is not even involved in this baby making process. All right. I know what your priorities are.
Especially because it was the result of their conversation about like, what's it going to take to keep you in line. And instead of having them really answer that question, they sort of did, well, we're going to make him a prince, and then cut away, and we're going to have the rest of this conversation recapped by two dudes.
Right.
Yeah.
Strange.
Well, and which one of you gets stuck with the lengthy meditation on, spoiler, British boarding schools are harsh places for a young boy?
Heather.
Is it me? Is it an odd episode?
Man.
I can't wait.
Yes,
I haven't watched
it's the worst episode of the season.
I'm sorry.
Oh, good. I haven't watched ahead of where I'm recapping yet. Great.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Sometimes it's better when it's bad. But didn't you feel like I'm interested in the experiment of recasting the show every couple of years, but I feel like even halfway through this season, first of all, I don't feel like I'm really done with these actors yet. I don't feel like we've traveled far enough with them, but I also kind of wish we could push pause on that and be like, can we just remake these last two seasons, but have a female showrunner do it? I would be so curious to see how it would be
because
different.
Because she is so good. Claire Foy is so good.
Yeah, she's
amazing.
And what a waste of her this year.
The biggest betrayal of her is in the, I think you guys haven't gotten to it yet, but the episode with JFK, where she has an actual like smart idea and a great triumph on the world stage. And it turns out to be because she was completely manipulated by the Kennedys. So it's like a complete, it just sells her out so much. Like she can't do when she's not being passive, which you guys both call out in your recaps. And I think you're absolutely right that the show keeps her passive all the time. But when she finally does make a move, it turns out to be, you know, via trickery.
But not only via trickery, but because of her, you know, jealousy and you know, being upstaged by another woman.
They sold out Jackie big time too. Like it's
her too. Yeah, for
that
sure.
Whole, I was excited to see what Michael C. Hall did as JFK casting spoiler, I guess, whatever. It's been out a while, but then he, oh God, that whole episode. I'm very excited to see what you think of it because I got real mad and there were a lot of capital letters in my notes.
Quick sidebar.
Yeah.
Best JFK on the screen. I still got to go with Bruce Greenwood. He was
me
great
too.
In 13 days.
Yeah, he's good.
He is good.
Yeah. He would be mine too.
I can sign off on that.
Okay. Good.
It's funny that here they have Julian, what's his name, from Downton Abbey playing Bobby because he was JFK in Smash's Bombshell.
Oh, that's right.
Oh my God.
Julian Ovenden or Ovenden?
Oh, I know who you mean. That guy. Oh, yeah. Yes.
And Jackie is played by a South African actor, and you can tell.
Oh my goodness, you guys.
Yeah, her accent is bad, but at least she has like her eyes look like you could put your whole hand in between them.
That's
like
true.
The real Jackie. Sorry, Jackie. R.I.P.
Outstanding.
That is the measure. Yeah, that's what the casting director just she came into the room, slapped her palm in between the eyes. You're hired.
I haven't gotten there yet. I'm looking forward to it. The one that really Jessica just let me sneak peek her recap for episode 6, which is the Nazi episode, obviously.
Yes. And that was my favorite, I think.
Interesting.
I thought it was partly good because we both were frustrated with parts of it. And I think my main bone of contention is Elizabeth again, because I thought I just don't understand why they're fiction. Like I've never, and I admittedly am not a scholar, a Windsor scholar by any stretch, but I've never read anything that implied she had any lingering affection for Edward.
Yeah, like hates his guts. She
hates his guts.
For killing her dad.
It's astonishing to me that the crown clings to this idea that she is so persuadable by him, like that she's always keeps coming back to him as like, I'm so fond of you and she'll listen to him. And she was so gullible when he was telling her, trying to talk his way out of trouble, and that she still had to go ask for advice from like 3 different people, men, before she could decide, well, okay, maybe you being a Nazi is bad. Like I felt like that was a criminal portrayal of her.
And
it
wasn't the situation. Like I did like that at the end of this episode, they sort of mutely put up a bunch of pictures of the real Duke of Windsor and just didn't
it's
comment on it at all. And we're like,
yeah. Well, I mean, I assume that was because, you know, they do take liberties, but it's like, well, we weren't kidding about this. This is for real.
No, they're historically bad. I mentioned this in the recap, but, during the war at some point, Wallace Simpson sent British Secret Service back into Nazi-occupied France to retrieve a bathing suit she had left.
They were bad people.
Yeah.
They were bad.
She's a wonderful lady. They were real bad.
They were bad to each other. They were bad for each other.
Yeah.
And they were just bad. But the real story is so much more interesting, which is that they had the benefit of like slightly better PR glamour-wise than she did.
Oh, yeah, she had good taste.
And she had only so many choices as to how she was going to handle them publicly. I can recommend some books in the show notes. But I mean, I don't know. That was a lost opportunity, I agree. But the actors playing them, flawless. I always love to see them.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Alex Jetting is so good. He's so good in that part. I get why they want to bring him back. Like, he's great in that part. But I always like, Heather and I always say that we like to write and also to watch scenes where people like really emotionally twist the knife in each other. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like if, historically speaking, Elizabeth hates Edward because she blames him for abdicating, making her father the king, and ergo killing him from the stress. Well, that's a great scene where she yells at him like, you're a Nazi and you killed my dad. Why are we not seeing this?
I mean,
it's just British. But I think
maybe.
But it's a soap opera. Let's come on. Downton Abbey had Mr. Bates in jail twice. We can have some screaming.
And then she throws a corgi at him. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I'll watch that.
Yes. She is capable of some cut downs and they don't give them to her. And I was like, I just don't understand her being like, I'm terribly fond of you, but no. And I'm like, why are you fond of him at this point? And putting the pictures at the end of the episode almost made her look worse, because it's like, how could you even look at those and think for a second about oh, maybe I should forgive him because forgiveness and Jesus. No, I'm sorry. No, I don't.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my interpretation wasn't that she necessarily meant it when she said she was fond of him, but the Billy Graham-ness coinciding with it. And I don't know if that's historically accurate either, if those two events were contemporaneous, but that she liked the idea of forgiving him. She liked being in the position that she could forgive him and change his life for the better. And also, like, if it is a PR thing, that if she thought it will reflect well on me if he's liked by some of the people and I can bring him back. But what I also loved about that episode for this moment in history, for our moment in history particularly, is that mm-hmm. he thought it would never come out. And he was almost right. Like, he almost got away with it, and that he could be so arrogant to think, I'll just go get a job in the Foreign Service. It'll be great. No one will ever know I fucking shook hands with Hitler.
Well, and there's also no exploration. I mentioned this last season, but there's no exploration of the idea that, like, ordinarily when you ascend to the throne, it's because your predecessor died and you have nobody to ask for advice. But there is a living monarch. And the two of them in the same room never take up that topic. And I can't imagine that it never came up.
I honestly don't know if in real life she ever really spoke to him very often. They had a very contentious relationship.
And he was gone most of the time. Like, I'm sure that that's true. But since we're fictionalizing it, like,
exactly. No, I agree.
I'd like to see these people in a completely unique position. It's like that interviewer who asked George Harrison what it's like to be a Beatle. And he's like, what's it like not to be one? Like,
right.
Even if they hated each other, they had that to talk about, them and them alone. So, but it's still a good show. Like, it's maddening, the opportunities that they're missing this time around, to me, but it's still very watchable, I thought.
Yeah. I agree.
In terms of format, like, it's such a binge show. Like, I don't think it would work as well if you had to wait.
No,
oh, totally.
It wouldn't.
Yeah.
We watched them 5 and 5 on Saturday and Sunday. Like, we choked them down and it was great. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think it would be as effective if you had to wait in between.
I was saying to Heather and I were talking about this weekend, and I said to her, I compared it again to Downton Abbey, where I was like, there are times where I'm like, wow, I have like major issues with the show and like huge notes, but I really enjoy it and I'm so glad it's on.
Yeah.
As contradictory as that is, like, it is something that brings me pleasure even as I shit all over it.
Well, as we said up top, you can find Heather and Jessica's recaps of The Crown at previously.tv. They are superb and you helped make them happen. So thank you again to all of our backers of our Indiegogo campaign.
Yes.
And on Indeed. From the classy to the crude, Happy, a new show on Sci-Fi. Dave, you read the graphic novel that this is based on. So why don't you give us a little bit of a précis about what this show is? Airs on Wednesdays.
One of the authors, and I forget the author's name, but he was responsible with this other comic book I read a couple years ago called The Boys, which was this like really super juvenile, ultra-violent comic that I super hated. And having read the entirety of the Happy comic, which isn't very long, so I'm interested to see how they can pad out the show if they're going to, or whether it's just going to be a one and done kind of thing. But it kind of shares some of those traits. The premise is there's this cop. What's his first name? Nick Sachs.
Nick Sachs.
And he's played by Christopher Maloney. And he is visited by a feathered blue unicorn who turns out to be an imaginary friend of a kidnapped child. And this child has been kidnapped by this super gross Santa guy. And the reason why, and this is like, if you haven't watched episode one, here's a little spoiler. The reason why Happy, the horse, the unicorn, visits Nikki Sachs is because the kidnapped girl is, in fact, his daughter, which he didn't know about. And that's sort of the premise of the show. And so it starts off with her kidnapping, and then his world, the mob world, and the Santa world sort of all collide. And as you get further along, you see how they're sort of connected in a bit, although that doesn't really happen in episode one. The premise is wacky, but super dark. And the show is a little, as dark as it is a little lighter than the comic book. I'm interested to see if that surprises anybody, because the show is kind of dark.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, Sarah, there's one of your faves in quotation marks is in this. Let's start with him.
Oh, which quote unquote fave?
Oh, well, Chris Maloney is your real fave. Of course, we all love him from SVU, but I was referring to Gus Halper.
Yes, he shows up as a little gangster and like immediately is aired out. And my notes read, oh, great, he's crying again, because that's basically all he did in Law and Order True Crime. Sorry, buddy. His hair.
Where he played Eric Menendez.
Yes, his hair looks great in this until he gets shot in the head. This is not bad. Like, I didn't hate it, but Patton Oswalt, I still.
Yeah, he voices the Happy, the horse.
Yeah.
The imaginary friend.
I mean, he does a fine job, but a little of him goes a long way and there's not a little of him. And here's my other issue. At this particular point in cultural history, I have no use for stories in which the hero is not accepting the central supernatural premise of the piece of art. Like, if you look at Poltergeist, where like Craig T comes home and Joe Beth is like, hey, so some ghost is stacking our chairs up in the kitchen. Check this out. He turns around. The chairs are stacked up. He's like, holy shit, our shit is haunted. And then you're off to the races. Like, yeah. It's not a short movie, but like, just believe what's happening to you in the first 10 minutes or I don't have time for you. So I don't.
Well, that's problem one. Problem two is that it takes two episodes for him to stop being like, you know, Happy comes to him and is like, there's a kid in trouble. Help this kid. I won't. Okay, I will. That takes two episodes. Like, we know you're going to try and find this kid regardless of her relationship to you.
Which he
also spends most of episode two denying. Like, just get to it. How long is this thing going to go on that we have to watch you dithering around? Anyway, Jessica, we'll start with you. What did you think?
All right. So I need to preface this by saying that this show is like, really, 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 really not my jam. Like, no, I would never watch this on my own accord. And in fact, I have to be honest and tell you guys, I turned it off about 45 minutes in because I could not take it anymore. I just can't.
Sorry.
Like, no, that's all right. I'm glad. I was like, I'm going to try something new. But like the super stylized violence is not appealing to me. Like, I don't like comic book movies particularly. And I have to say that I'm kind of at a point in my life right now where like, the like really fucked up anti-heroes like journey. I don't give a shit. Like, I don't care. I just don't care. Get your shit together. I'm not interested in seeing like Christopher Maloney spit blood into a urinal and then like go on a hero's journey to like become a better man. I don't give a fuck. Get out of here.
Who will fight me?
Okay, that's totally fair. That's not necessarily the reaction I thought, because when it starts out with a child being snatched, I'm like, oh great, I gave this to Heather, a parent of two children. Sorry, man.
I will say that when I watched it, I was like, I hate this, but people who aren't me will probably really like it. Like, I get that it's for people who are not me. Anyway, go ahead, Heather.
Yes, go ahead, Heather.
It is also not really my thing. I mean, the whole time I did not look it up because I'm apparently a jerk, but I assumed it had to be based on a comic book because of the sheer amount of bodily harm and substances that he consumes in the first hour and a little bit with no negative effects on him whatsoever. Like, he just opens his mouth in the ambulance and they keep sticking drugs in it. And then there's a gunshot and like several heart attacks and he gets hit by a car and all this stuff. And he's completely fine. And that sort of took me out of it. And I was like, this has got to be one of those, like, it's a strange supernatural. And I kind of couldn't. But I also felt like at times I was watching, particularly like right from the beginning with the Scaramucci brothers and with Maloney, I just was like, I feel like I'm watching a small off-Broadway play, but that's being put on in a gigantic theater where the only direction was play it to the last row. Yeah. Nobody can see or hear what you're doing or feeling. Just assume if you think you've done enough, double it. Like, that's what I thought. I could not stand Christopher Maloney in it. I thought he was awful, like really bad.
The problem with that character and his copious amounts of substance abuse and still being able to function is the same problem when you have a hero that can like never miss a shot with his gun, can shoot behind him and like get somebody between the eyes. It's like there is a level where something is cool to see happen, but then there is a level where if they can never miss, you just know that they can never die, right? It's the Die Hard thing. It's like Die Hard worked because he couldn't do everything because he stepped on glass like a moron and he had to go pick out glass from his feet in the bathroom. Whereas a show like this, it's like if you can pop 12 nitro pills in an ambulance and not have your head explode from all the blood going into it, then, you know, there's a certain amount of like godliness to him, even though he is a complete drunk. And
that is
the way the comics drawn. That is the way the other comics that I've read by the same guy are drawn, which I don't read anymore because it's so juvenile. Especially the other one. It's just like, it's too much. Like it's too stylized.
Yeah. And the sheer number of people that he is capable of killing just because he's like, well, I guess this is the part where I kill you. It's like, oh, what? So you're strapped to a table and being tortured. And then you're like, well, all right, I guess so. And you pop off the things and everyone's dead. Like, what? I didn't get it. Apparently my theme this week is what?
But don't you find, like, for me, this show was somebody who was put on ice during the Tarantino 90s.
Yes.
Was just thought
totally.
Out.
Yes.
And had to make a show with today's level of, like, you know, impropriety and violence and everything. And that this is the product of it. Because it really seemed like that kind of thing.
It did feel dated to me. I agree with you. And I don't know if some of that is just because now I'm, like, very sensitive to, like, people shooting people. And I am not someone who, like, cares about violence in movies that much. But I was just kind of like, ugh, I've seen all this.
Yeah. I after the first one, I don't have a problem with violence. Quite to the contrary, as Dave knows, I'm very
Tar loves ultraviolence.
I do. Yeah. But at the end of the first of these, I was like, oh, that's pretty good. I'd keep watching it. And then we watched the second one. I was like, that's probably enough. It's very much like Ash versus Evil Dead on Stars and Stan versus Evil. Like, but all of these are very samey to me, where it's like a little of this goes a long way. And you're putting so much on people really liking your protagonist. So mm-hmm. if you mm-hmm. can't give them dimension, then everyone's going to check out. Although I will say, in the second episode, they have a funny bit where Nick goes to a poker game to try and win a bunch of money just because he's trying to blow town. And they have Happy, hover above his opponent's head in this poker game and tell him what's in his hand. And obviously no one else in the room can hear it, which I thought, okay, that's clever. That's a smart way to use this character, but the character of the imaginary horse, I mean, but the rest of it, like, the two episodes are plenty. I don't need to see the rest of it. I don't think.
And if it follows the comic, like, you really don't, like, it goes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll take your word for it.
I was unimpressed by the end of the comic. Yeah.
Sold.
All right, it is time to go around the dial. Our first stop, choo-choo, Tara Ariana.
It is with a heavy heart, I must tell you, that Doug and Jamie are at it again. I've talked about Married at First Sight on this podcast before, and of course on our sister podcast, Bride and Doom, which I do with Brian Rubenstein. Doug and Jamie are one of the three out of 15 successful matches of Married at First Sight that they have done in five seasons of the show. All of the other couples are divorced. Doug and Jamie this year not only managed to remain married, but they had a baby.
Aww.
Which is great.
But
however,
monsters.
Okay, so they're making a new spinoff series about them and raising their kid. They previously had already been in the spinoff series Married at First Sight, the first year, which was them and the one other couple from the first season of the show that stayed married. So what you need to know, if you don't follow Jamie on social media, which I don't, but past and future guests of this show, Stephanie Green, who also hosts Wine and Roses for us, would send me dispatches as Twitter DMs, and I was always very mad about it. But Jamie got pregnant, I think, last year and lost the baby fairly early on, but aww, not so early that they didn't know it was a boy, and they named him. And like, this is horribly sad and awful, and I'm not making fun of it, but this is also in the show, which is, this is the 2-hour premiere of Doug and Jamie plus one, is a special, movie length event. And it's going to be on Lifetime next week, but they start talking about this miscarriage, like, almost immediately. And like, it's already enough of a prostitution of your own life to have a reality show that's just about you being married and having a baby. But on top of that, to like kick it off with like, and now the reason that we're so excited about Henley, our rainbow baby, which I guess is what you call it if you have a baby after a miscarriage or a loss of a child, because they're just like, they're leaning so far into this miscarriage. Like, keep some shit to yourself. Like, don't expose this to assholes like me. It's no one's business but yours. But she's already done it all over social media, so I guess they were like, well, we might as well. And I'm not kidding. Like, it was like every day it was, you know, we miss you, Jamie, or we miss you, James, you're our angel up at blah, blah, blah. Like it was a lot. And it's not my place to judge how anyone mourns, but it was a lot. So there's that hanging over this thing. Plus, we also find out Doug has also just lost his job. So then there's all this stress about like, well, we just bought this house, which we know from Married at First Sight the first year is all Jamie wanted to do. And then she immediately was like, and then he lost his job, so we can't afford it. So like all of this, like, it's really dark. The show is so dark for being all about the birth of a baby, which, by the way, do we see her in labor? Yes, we do. Is her incredibly intrusive mother-in-law there in the delivery room? Yes, she is. I can't recommend this to anyone, including people who watch Married at First Sight. Like, it's so miserable and it's so long. And all of it is just like, Jamie also dredges up all her shit with her mother too. Like, these people should not be on TV. And I really get the sense that they're only doing this because Doug lost his job and like they needed the money, which is also dark. But oh my God, Lifetime, like, please stop with these people. Let them live their lives in public. They need to. I need them to. Will I keep watching it? Yes. Now, having gotten the bad taste of that out of your mouths, I want to recommend on the good end of the reality spectrum, ABC this weekend premiered Encore, which is a show created and hosted by Kristen Bell. And the premise of it is that the casts of old high school musicals, like people that really did them in their schools when they were in high school, get back together and put on the same show that they did 20 years later in a week. And the first episode, it was a school from West Covina, and they put on Into the Woods. And we get a little bit of the drama from like the people that still remember the old resentments, like the fact that the daughter of the drama teacher got the part of the witch in Into the Woods, which is like the big meaty part. Exactly.
I was in Into the Woods and the head of my drama club. So I'm in on this. I need to watch this.
It's really good. And I will also say at the end of it, I was like, why don't they put the edited version of the finished show on Hulu? Because it's like 55 minutes of them putting it together and 5 minutes of the actual product, like, of the staging of it. Cause like, this is what you have streaming services for. Like, people would watch that. I would 100% watch it. So, it's really sweet and heartwarming, like, other than the scandals of, you know, shit that went on literally 20 years ago. Like, it's a very sweet family viewing.
There's a different licensing structure for clips versus whole production.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's totally it. Mm. Yeah.
That's a good point. Anyway, Encore, I think this was just a special sneak preview and that it's going to be on for real in the new year, but it will be on Hulu and on the ABC app. And if you didn't watch it, you should, because it made me cry because I'm a sap. And for my plug, this is related to our lead topic this week. We have a new podcast, the Epic Old School Recap Podcast, where we, and by we, I mean me so far, read you our big ass recaps. So the first, as we record this, the first episode of The Crown is up and we will have more to come. I've also recorded the two Walking Deads that have been published so far. So yeah, if you don't feel like reading or your eyes are tired, if you have that as an alternative, you're welcome.
Heather.
Alrighty. Well, as we've already covered, a lot of what I'm watching right now is this little show called The Crown. So I'm not going to talk about that one, but it leaves me very little time to watch other stuff, except for when I'm doing like a long form task, like if I have to clean out the kitchen or if I'm cooking on the holidays or whatever. So I want to just put something on that I can kind of binge watch mindlessly, which is more of a compliment than it sounds like. And so what I've been doing lately is watching Mindy Project on Hulu, which is a show that when it was on Fox, I very occasionally watched, and I did not follow it to Hulu. But I was just looking for something sort of cheerful and colorful that I could just sort of, you know, like dip in and out of if my head's in a cupboard and then pop out and be like, what just happened? And it's surprisingly satisfying that way. Like it's not a show I would have ever waited week to week to watch, which I actually think is how Hulu dropped them. So I'm not sure why, because it benefits from lumping them together. Because while it magnifies the show's ticks, it also just, I think it holds together better if you look at it in clumps. And so, I don't know, it picks up my mood if I'm feeling overwhelmed by how much I loathe Prince Philip. And I heartily endorse it if you find yourself doing like a lot of lengthy holiday cooking and you just want something on in the background.
The outfits are so good too.
Oh yeah,
true. The outfits are so good. really good. Like it's plenty of good eye candy on that show. And I don't mean dudes. I mean like her sweaters and stuff. Mm-hmm. so that would be my recommendation.
Nice.
And I don't know that I have a plug other than, as usual, if you're, we have a book. So if you're interested in the story of an American woman marrying a British prince, I don't know why that might interest you right now at this point in time, but if it does, there's a book called The Royal We that you can buy anywhere that sells publications. And we hope you enjoy it.
Enormously recommended.
Jessica, it's your turn.
Okay, so every time I'm on this podcast, I am always sharing like the trashiest humanly possible things to watch. Last time it was Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders making the team, which I want to say a lot of people reached out to me and they were like, oh my God, I watched that too. And then
you got a lot of feedback on that one.
Hey, confidential, just between us, everybody's listening can just like take off their headphones for a moment. That show is our number one most problematic show on the site.
Oh, I believe it.
Everything that happens behind the scenes drama-wise is connected to that show. Definitely number one. Yeah.
Because the forums are always, people are always getting into fights and stuff.
Yeah.
That completely makes absolute and total sense to me. It is very enjoyable, but it is not high art. And in the same category, Bravo TV's best reality show, I'm going to say that, maybe leaving out Top Chef, but maybe not, Vanderpump Rules has returned to my heart. It started last week. And I just want to say this show is like trash deliciousness, but it is the funniest edited show on Bravo. Everyone who works on it knows the show they are on. It is like laugh out loud funny to me. Sort of like the main bo hunk who has cheated on every girlfriend he's ever had is denying that he cheated on her again in the opener. And we're all like, Jax, come on. We know you did this. He's had a nose drop, 3 nose drops. They're all exactly the same. Like it is a trash heap. I am not proud of it. It is my favorite show. And I'm just really glad it's back. And if you ever really just need pure, hilarious reality trash, it's trash. I'm sorry, you guys who work on Vanderpump Rules, you know it's trash, but it is beautifully done trash and it is hilarious. And I'm thrilled that it's back.
Hooray.
And do you also have a book about
yes, the same one. Yes.
Oh, okay.
In addition to our book, obviously, we always want people to come by, go fuck yourself and say hello. If they would like to talk about the ugly red carpet fashions of the day, please pop on over.
Sarah D. Bunting.
All right, folks. I finally did it. I finally watched American Vandal.
Woo!
I had been saving this one for the holiday break, but Dan, my husband, and I ended up powering through the entire season in one night, which...
Only 4 hours.
Well, still, but we started at like 10:30 and we're old. So there was like a moment. We finished like episode 7 and like they're short. We were seriously falling asleep, but I was like, I cannot go to bed without seeing the last episode. And then that was like 40 minutes. So we're like doing jumping jacks to wake up. Anyway, that's American old people. American Vandal, we are too old to do this kind of thing, but it was so worth it. Everything about
so
the
good
parody aspects of it as a true crime property is dead on. The moody shot making, the weepy interviews with the mom, the artsy placement of the chyrons, and then like turning them red and erasing them, which is straight out of Making a Murderer, like literally, that here's what we know narration in which he literally says, here's what we know. The portentous B-roll of like flags wanly flapping. It's so good. But then the actual story is good too in the details of it. Like when they show the pile of Dylan's detention slips, like I had to pause and laugh hysterically at making whale noises for like 10 minutes. It was so funny. And the numerous, and then he's like sharpening the pencil and she's like, Dylan, not. He's like, I like it really sharp. He's such an asshole. The numerous attempts by the various kids to explain the difference between the ball hairs and the not ball hairs dicks to grownups without using the words ball or hairs. And it's really well cast. It does feel quite real. These feel like real kids and not 30-year-olds. The kid playing Dylan is 25, but even that works in the story. It's also a drama about these kids and what their lives are like in high school. So it's serial meets 13 Reasons Why. And people say the word dicks like 194 times in every episode. It is fantastic. Apparently it's on for season two. I have no idea how they're going to do that. I don't care. I'm excited about it. I loved it. I'm sorry it took me so long to watch it. And thank you for everybody who recommended it for doing so. It was great.
We loved it too.
It's so good. My plug, not surprisingly, is also true crime related. Our previously.tv true crime podcast, The Blotter, is all Felicity related projects this week and all Buncey because Gremlins ate John's internet. So I had to just like work off his notes. But I, with some help from John's notes, we'll be talking about Noel Crane in Final Vision, which is about the Jeffrey McDonald case, and also this very obscure and rightfully so TV movie from the late 90s starring Kate Jackson and, for like 2 seconds, Ben Covington as a arson demolitions expert, question mark?
Oh, God.
It's bad. He looks really cute, though, for a fetus, which he totally is. But anyway, that is on The Blotter. The Blotter Presents, excuse me, and that should be live as you're listening to this. So subscribe and check it out.
All right. So apologies. There's no littlest hobo recap this week because I just ran out of time. I have not been feeling super great. But I do have a recommendation, and that is Norseman, which is on Netflix. This is a Finnish comedy about Vikings in the 700s. And it reminds me a bit of Monty Python and the Holy Grail. It is very dry, but also very stupid. I'll paint you a picture of the opening scene. There is a clan of Vikings bringing some slaves that they've captured back to their hometown after, you know, months and months on this raiding party. There is one slave on the boat that doesn't really understand that he's now a slave and is sort of like asking for water, just kind of being a general pest. And the first mate is sort of explaining things like, you know, you're going to be in a new place. You're going to work hard. You're going to learn some new skills, blah, blah, blah. And this guy's like, you know, the exchange of information on this boat seems very one-sided. And then the chief walks up from behind his first mate, basically punches this slave, and then goes back to his first mate. He's like worried that that was a bit too much. And he's he's uncomfortable with this fear-based leadership method that he has. I have a couple clips. This first clip is the brother of the king who is in charge of the village while he's gone, meeting up with the chief's or king's wife about things that have happened while he's gone. And one of his edicts while the real king has been gone. And here's that scene.
What is this? So the rumors are true? That you sent the old people in the village to their death?
Well, they took the ættestup.
You finally got a chance to run this village, Orm. And the result is that people are forced to throw themselves to their death because we don't have any food. What kind of leadership is that? Are you pleased with yourself?
Yes, I think things are starting to fall into place.
Well, I don't.
Well, then we just have to agree to disagree, which is something I've decided to start saying.
And the other scene, which is also with this brother of the chief character, is his wife was also on the raiding party. She comes back and he makes note of a new necklace that she is wearing in our second clip.
In Loki's name, what's that around your neck?
Oh, this is Monk's necklace. It's like a trophy I made.
Is that a cock necklace?
Mm-hmm. From the monks.
Are those monks giants? You know, these sizes are completely out of proportions. Can you imagine, you know, getting hard with a tool like that? You'd be in trouble.
Why?
Because you'd just drop to the floor. You know, your blood would go straight from your head and down to your tool. You know, you would pass out completely.
No, usually they don't. Actually, this is quite standard size, I think.
No. Yes. I have exactly the same tool, so I think I know what a huge penis is, but those are normal.
Yes. I'm going to go now.
Yeah, I just feel very sorry for those people who have to walk around with things like that. You know, I feel sorry for them. What a handicap.
because you can't see them. I thought at the beginning of the scene they were finger bones. So that's the size of what he thinks are enormous penises.
It's dry. It's crude. It's very much like a British sensibility via sort of an austere Scandinavian you know, sort of aesthetic.
It's very funny. The episodes are only a half hour. There are six.
Yep. It is time for the canon. Tari Ariano, take it away.
Hello. In recent years, there have been few new shows worse served by their marketing than Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, starting with the title, in fact, which was probably conceived to double as a grabby logline during the pitch stage, but which the actual show has had to contextualize over the course of two seasons and counting. It's in its third season now, making it clear to viewers that Rebecca is not just a caricature of a crazy ex, as an unwoke dude might use the phrase, but a woman dealing with deep-seated, very serious mental illness, or not dealing with it a lot of the time. Of course, we didn't know that back in its freshman season. And anyone who managed to get past that weird season one ad campaign and hung into episode four, I'm going on a date with Josh's friend, was rewarded with a smart, complex story and some pretty excellent music. So prior to this point, we've seen our protagonist, Rebecca Bunch, try to cure her depression by leaving a high-status job as a lawyer in Manhattan to follow her camp boyfriend, Josh, to his hometown of West Covina, only an hour from the beach. We've seen her use Josh's friend, Greg, to try to draw Josh's attention by making him jealous. We've seen her try to force a friendship with Josh's girlfriend, Valencia, who is rightly suspicious of Rebecca's true motives. In this fourth episode, Rebecca is still trying whatever she can think of to get in Josh's path. God, that's hard to say. For example, taking up skateboarding, intending to run into Josh and his nephew at the skate park. But as the episode title promises, Rebecca's path is going in another direction this week. Here's what I think makes I'm Going on a Date with Josh's Friend a canon contender. Number one, Rebecca's date with Greg fleshes out both their characters. Even though he knows Rebecca's into Josh, Greg still has a crush on her, and when he asks her out, it turns into a series best musical number, Settle for Me, which you can hear in clip one.
Settle for me, darling, just settle for me. I think you'll have to agree, we make quite a pair. I know I'm only second place in this game, but like 2% milk, or say tan beef, I almost taste the same. So won't you settle for me? Come on and settle for me. Say yes or no before I choke on all this swallowed pride. I have no problem being picked out from the bottom. If he's your broken condom, I'm plan B. So lower those expectations and settle for me. Am I okay with this? Totally.
Rebecca decides that going out with Greg is a healthy choice of a piece with others she's making this week, thanks to the message of a pointed butter ad, which for the uninitiated is a callback to the series premiere, like becoming a vegan and buying, if not using, a treadmill desk. Trying to be adult on their date doesn't come naturally to Rebecca as she starts by quizzing him on his favorite president, but she soon relaxes and finds out she and Greg have things in common other than low self-esteem, as we hear in clip two.
Let's see, little known facts about me. Okay, so once a week I Google trivia about the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire.
Shut up, I love that fire. That's like my favorite fire.
No, stop messing with me, I know it's weird.
Why is it weird to be obsessed with the flashpoint that single-handedly ignited labor reform in the U.S.?
Speaking of flashpoint, you're blowing my mind right now.
Stick around.
Unfortunately for her, Rebecca has enough self-regard to get way too touchy and pick a fight over a guacamole contest, but Greg remains calm in clip three.
This is hilarious. But you're suddenly an expert on authentic cuisine? Is this like your authentic veganism?
What's that supposed to mean?
It's very funny. It's cute, the vegan thing.
It's cute. Thank
you. It's cute. It's like how you became Buddhist, like yesterday.
Okay. You're being really mean. You're making fun of me.
Hey, what's wrong?
No, nothing's wrong. I just liked it better when you were being a nice person.
I'm just teasing you. You can be a bit of a hypocrite. I mean, you have to admit, you're not exactly, in general, like, steeped in honesty. You moved to California to be by the beach. Obviously, something happened in New York. You had a bit of a nervous breakdown.
Okay, as long as we're being super honest, let's talk about when you asked me out and your whole settle for me vibe. Like, it's weird and sad.
Okay, well, that's not quite how I remembered it. But the truth is, I don't want you to settle for me. We get each other. And we get along. Look, I'm sorry I tease you. I will stop. Let's just go back to having a good time, okay?
Yeah, okay. Okay. I totally overreacted too, so.
Okay then.
Okay. Oh, wow. We just like really worked through something there. Like adults. Like we're normal.
Some may say healthy.
Rebecca is incapable of accepting the romantic interest of someone who will both call her on her bullshit and stick around to get through the conflict that may spark. So, of course, she blows off Greg with a text and takes home the Echo Park guacamolist instead, as we hear in clip 4.
So, what should I do with the 2 condoms that you made me wear?
Trash cans in the bathroom.
Cool. Hey, by the way, you finished, right?
Yeah, I finished a bunch.
You're welcome.
When Man Bun leaves, Greg confronts Rebecca for sabotaging their date. And unlike other Manic Pixie Dream Girl TV series, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend doesn't let Rebecca off the hook by making it seem like her selfishness is cute or endearing, and we hear her regrets in clip 5.
Do you ever have one of those days where you've done something so horrible, it feels like you did it in a dream, and you just want to wake up and... you want it to be all okay, but there's no waking up because you did it for realsies.
I mostly included that clip because it was such an eloquent way of describing that feeling. The point is, the episode ends before Greg and Rebecca have made any kind of peace. The damage she did is still on her mind, and it will be a while before Greg trusts her again. Rebecca's currently untreated mental illness is the reason for her destructive behavior, but as far as the show is concerned, it's not an excuse. This is borne out over the rest of the series, coming to a scary crisis point in the current season, season 3. And for me, rewatching this episode, knowing where things are going with Rebecca, gave it a lot more heft. Because you see that they really laid a lot of groundwork with her right from the start. Anyway, Greg and Rebecca are pretty cute there in the middle for a while, right? Number 2, speaking of reasons for destructive behavior, this is the first we see of Rebecca's mom. Though we've heard her voice in flashbacks prior to this point, Tova Felcha appears here on screen for the first time in the role of Naomi, Rebecca's nightmare mother, via FaceTime in clip 6.
Hi, Mom. What's up?
Put me on video chat or whatever you call it. I want to see your face.
No, I can hear your face.
Just do it. I have exciting news.
Wait, are you calling me from Dr. Weinstein's office?
Yes, I'm just waiting for my pap.
Hey, little Becca, how are you? UTI's under control?
Anyway, I wanted to tell you that I was reading the Sunday Styles and I saw that Audra Levine just got married. And to a hedge fund manager.
Good for Audra Levine.
Also, she got the promotion you didn't take. Remember the one you were too good for? So now basically she has a life you could have had, almost had, but ruined with all your ridiculous choices.
Okay. So nice talking to you, Mom. I'm hanging up now, but thanks for the salt in the wound.
At least it's kosher salt.
He delivered you.
That's a very economical distillation of what helped make Rebecca like this. And for more on what Audra Levine's been up to, keep watching season 1. Number 3, the songs are great. Yeah, I'll drop a Jersey ref to pander to Sarah. Adam Schlesinger of Fountains of Wayne is the show's executive music producer and co-writes the songs with Rachel Bloom, who created the show and plays Rebecca. We've already heard a snippet of the old Hollywood Settle for Me, a number that plays out in black and white. But before that, we get to go inside Rebecca's interior monologue after she brings home a Tinder date played by the younger of Ben Stiller's sons from the Royal Tenenbaums. Sorry to ruin it, but he is.
Oh my God.
No.
Picture him in a tracksuit. Here's a little Hey Sexy Stranger, clip 7.
Please don't be a murderer. Please, please, please don't be a murderer.
I'm sorry, I'll stop talking about the murderer thing. Let me get back to playing with your thing. You got a beautiful ass, strong ass arms.
Is that a gun?
Oh, thank God, it's just your penis.
Have you been tested for STDs?
STDs.
Tell me, please.
STDs.
Just making sure
most people don't know about the window.
Hey, sexy stranger, let's go to my place. And please don't harvest my kidney. Don't give me that incredulous face. I saw a movie like that on Lifetime.
Your balls smell weird. Your balls smell so much worse than I feared. You haven't aired out those balls in hours. Please.
High five to the producers for figuring out that having the guy twiddle a pair of little balls in his hand when Rebecca meets him meant they could bring them back for this part of the song and get it past the censor. Number four, the dancing is great. I guess this is more like point 3A, but half the reason Settle For Me is such a Hall of Fame clip from the Crazy Ex-Girlfriend songbook is that is what we can't really convey on a podcast, the dancing. The segment is beautifully edited to let us see that Bloom and Santino Fontana, who plays Greg, really are dancing ballroom and tap, and both their quick step and tap are a huge pleasure to watch. The choreographer also wittily echoes the lyrics in their steps. When Greg says he's losing his masculinity, Rebecca dips him. When he references being Solange to Josh's Beyonce, he does a little bit of the single ladies dance. Bloom's moves during the Hey Sexy Stranger are also very well executed in their cliched lasciviousness. If you're going to make your show a musical comedy, you have to commit, and the care and thoughtfulness that goes into the production of the musical numbers is crucial in order for them not to feel gimmicky or extraneous. Number five, the jokes are great. In addition to the relationship story that makes up most of the episode, there are jokes. Here's a composite of several from various points in the episode in clip eight.
So, I don't know, maybe you should work at a place that sells books instead of gear. I guess that would be a library.
No.
On the entire SAT, I got two questions wrong, and in subsequent years, those questions were stricken for being misleading.
I'm sorry, Bonker Balls isn't in the DSM-5 yet?
Can't monopolize the bathroom at a taco festival!
You can't. And in addition to jokes, there is our friend Will Hines in clip nine.
Do you feel disgusted and uneasy with your current butter? Make an effort, make a decision. Don't make mistakes. Gary, you've been coming up with some really intense copy lately. Don't get me wrong. The butter is flying off the shelves, but is everything okay?
I left my wife for a prostitute.
So, congratulations, Will Hines. You may also know him as he recurs on Brooklyn Nine-Nine as a DA. Later episodes of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend explore family pressures, female friendships, codependency, and heavy boobs, always, of course, in song. But the potential we see in Greg and Rebecca's date and Bloom's lack of vanity in portraying how Rebecca fucks it up is a turning point for the series. Even if you might have had another episode in mind for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend's first canon induction, I hope you'll settle for me and my submission.
I think that I'm supposed to take the pole position here. So why don't we start with Jessica?
Okay. So when I saw this was the one you were presenting, I did think, I don't know if I would pick that one. And then I rewatched it and I was like, oh yeah, this is a really good episode. Like, obviously I remembered Settle For Me because it is a unforgettable number. It's obviously one of the best ones the show has ever done. But also the tender date murderer number, I think, is so funny, and it really encapsulates something I think the show does so well. And I love the show, which is that you think you're getting one song, but Rebecca's like neuroses always sinks into it. Like they're always so like true to her character. You know, I remember watching the pilot, and as I know you guys remember, the pilot ends with or includes a sexy getting ready song, which is so. Yeah. So memorable and great. And I feel like this song is kind of related to that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's just a much sort of more complete episode than I recalled it being. You know, meeting her mom, I think, is really good. But just the show is so funny. And I think this is also, I don't remember, but it must be because if it's episode four, that's so early on. I think this was the first time we really got to see Heather, who is such a funny character. Like her deadpan affect never fails to make me laugh. And then, as you mentioned, just the tag on this episode is amazing. It's maybe my favorite one. I love the tag on the pilot where the musician's like, oh my God, I can't believe I made women do this.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
This is a terrible thing. So they're very good at that. But this one it's maybe my favorite tag they've ever done. I think it's hilarious. Yeah, I just love the show. I think Heather and I were recently on another podcast that was about something wholly different. And the podcaster asked us, like, what are you watching on TV right now that's like helping you get through the world? And one of my answers was Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I think it is so smart and so underrated in so many ways. All the performances are so great. And it's just such a pleasure. It's one of the few shows that I actually really watch, like almost, I don't always watch it Friday night, but like it doesn't go more than 48 hours usually for me to watch it.
Yeah, this season has been especially strong, I think, too.
Sublime, yeah. I'd like, I don't want to spoil anyone, but Paula's opening number last week was an exceptional moment for me in every way.
Yeah.
It's just so good. And I think it's also one of those shows where just when you think they've kind of gone as far as they can go, they figure out a way to take the plot that is organic, but also interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just such a clever show. I love the show.
All right. Heather.
I also love the show. I get so much joy from it. And I was not sure how I felt about this one in the canon either, just because sometimes I can't tell if my feelings about an episode are about the episode or just about things I wish for the series as a whole. For example, I watched this and I remember at the time being like, oh, I love her with Greg. I wish this wasn't happening in episode 4. They blew their wad on Rebecca and Greg too soon. And like, it makes me sad that like, soured so because it had to sour so early. And the Heather stuff, you know, the episode is framed by Heather, who is analyzing Rebecca for her psych class. And it felt to me a little bit like a note, like somebody was like, no, seriously, we really have to make sure viewers understand that, like, we know she's a little bit crazy, but please stick with us because, like, we're on it. And that kind of felt like that was what her arc was. And I felt a little bit too much like, it felt a little too much like somebody was speaking to me, the viewer, being like, please don't leave. And the other thing was, I love the musical numbers in this episode, but as we've talked about it, and as Jessica mentioned, some of the ones in the pilot, I thought, oh, there are better versions of some of these musical numbers. Like, I think Sexy Getting Ready song is a better version of Hey Sexy Stranger. And I actually, this may be an unpopular opinion, but I sort of think Let's Have Intercourse is a better version of Settle for Me. I sing that song under my breath all the time. They're very similar thematically. It's also with a love interest character who she's not supposed to be feeling things for at that time. And I think that the tag in the pilot is a better tag than this one. It's hard to judge by the pilot because obviously the pilot they had way more time to work on and you can spit shine that. But you know, in sum, I think for me, I still really love this episode, and I don't know that I would nominate any one episode of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend to the canon because I think the whole show is a canon-worthy show in its entirety. Like, something about the way it works as a lump is so good and so perfect that it's hard for me to nominate any one chunk above the other. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I don't know. I'm still torn about what I'm going to vote on that one. It's definitely a good episode. I just don't know if I think it's like the one Hall of Fame episode.
Okay.
Dave.
Okay. So get ready for unpopular opinion corner. I think this show often doesn't deserve the changes it makes in its decisions. Like, I feel like the show does things on a dime. Especially in this first season with Josh and, you know, not Josh and Josh's friend. And it goes back and forth to the point where, like, very soon I didn't really care about that part of it. And that being the central thrust of it, at least for the first two seasons, I kind of felt like, okay, I'm just watching this show now for, you know, the musical numbers and just like the general silliness that can happen, which is very funny. But I felt the central heart of it, which was supposed to be this person moving across country and having this obsession, wasn't earned. And here comes a really unpopular part. In season 3, when her mental illness issues come forefront, I don't think the show earned that change either. And I may be speaking from like too much personal experience with my own shit going on, but I think that this show had this in mind, but didn't really think they would get there. I don't doubt that, like, this was in the back of somebody's notebook, that this could be somewhere the show could go if everything worked out. But it wasn't something they sold the show on. It wasn't something they were necessarily building a solid foundation for in the first season and the second season. And I think it kind of came out of left field too much in the third season, because these sort of issues, they are inside you. They fester, you obsess about them. Manifestation of it never really came to the forefront. And I kind of like felt broadsided by that, and it didn't feel true to me. So once again, like I kind of feel like I watch this show for little vignettes and I don't watch this show for the continuity, for the big themes, for a lot of the character arcs, at least for the major characters. So for this particular episode, like I think is emblematic of, you know, the whole Josh, not Josh problems I had early on. I think this episode actually draws those in stark relief. I think the songs are very good. I think the production's very good, but I have problems actually, sort of the opposite of Jessica, which is like, I think the show can be very funny and very worth watching, but I don't know if I would put anything up on the canon because I don't think it's a great show overall.
That was Heather.
Oh, Jessica. Sorry, Heather. Yeah. So, there is Unpopular Opinion Corner. And Sarah.
Well, I don't know where this is going to go because I'm still not sure how I'm going to vote. For those of you who've only been listening for 2 minutes to this podcast, Bunsy and musicals, not friends, generally. But I enjoyed this episode a lot. I laughed many times. Felcha, what can you say? The line right before the clip we heard where Rebecca's like, she's like a stalker. I used to live inside. Just made me laugh a lot. And also Gregory reacting to albino broccoli, which like now I can't stop thinking about that. And I really like cauliflower and now I'm just going to have to completely mask it in cheese so I don't think about that. Shut up. I love that fire is something I absolutely said something like on a date with my husband before we were married. Like, shut up. I love that crime. We have problems. This was really enjoyable though. I thought the music was good. I'm not Adam Grossworth and I have had many conversations about like the fact that the point of the songs in a musical is that the characters have to sing and dance. And if you don't believe that, then you don't believe in musicals, basically. And I believed it here. I thought the music was good. I also like that everyone on the show is normal looking, like very attractive, but they look like real people, which I find appealing. I think that we're coming out of a long era in American TV of everyone looking like they were extruded in a plastics factory and going towards a more European model of like not models, which I think is good. But at the same time, this episode seemed to take a little longer than it needed to take to do what it was trying to do. I laughed a lot. That button was hilarious. And the, you know, one of the tests of a canon for me, as people know, is that it did make me want to explore the show more. It made me want to give it a chance. Whereas before it was like, this is not for me and I'm never starting it because there's only so many hours in the day. And now I would consider it, but I'm not sure. Like I have no context for it because I've only ever watched the one episode. So I'm not sure what to do. And I'm interested to see that others are on the fence. So why don't we start the voting and put me last?
All right. That sounds good. I do want to say just one thing. I do watch this show every week and I do enjoy it. I didn't want to leaving the impression that I think the show is garbage and you shouldn't watch it. So let me slowly ask for the vote. Heather, what say you?
Okay, thinking. I am going to vote. I don't know, dude. I just don't know if I bought her running off and ditching him and sleeping with vegan guys. So I'm going to vote no. That's not why I'm voting no. It's a reason to vote no.
Jessica?
I will note that I don't like the part where she runs off and sleeps with the vegan guy. But I'm going to vote yes. I think it is, I think Subtle for me is enough of like a big moment in the show that it deserves it.
Sarah, deep bunting.
What about Sarah wants you to vote first.
Oh, okay. My vote is no for all the reasons I said.
Oh, all right. Well, that takes the pressure
yes,
off. But regardless, I would have voted no because it just was a little bit too slow. And I just don't have enough context to correct for that and put it over. And also, like, even a good musical is still a musical. Your presentation was excellent, though, and I will be stealing the word guacamolist.
Okay, so that means by a 3-2-1 vote, I'm sorry to say that Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, Season 1, Episode 4, I'm going on a date with Josh's friend, exclamation point, is not inducted into the extra Hungry Kid.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
No. It is time for winner and loser of the week. Tara has our winner.
Well, spoiler alert for the losers. It's not Bad Men, but I will say, even though it could be, Mario Batali and several people at the NFL Network, because you are pigs. But the winner is the Today Show, because since firing Matt Lauer, its ratings have really gone up and continue to go up. And I guess our winner is, more generally speaking, NBC, because Will and Grace got a Golden Globe nominee for Best Comedy. I'm sure I'm the only one here who has watched every episode, and I loved the original Will and Grace in its first run, but this season has been uneven is the kindest way to put it. It's mostly bad, and I know it's just the Golden Globes, but Jesus Christ. But still, congratulations to everyone who works on Will and Grace for that very undeserved honor.
And loser of the week.
Nice segue. My loser is nominees. The broadcast networks got shit at the WGA Awards, nominations wise.
For the first time Leftovers, ever. That's never happened before.
Yeah. Once again, Leftovers is on the Pay No Mind list at the Golden Globes. Mm-hmm. And the Globes also nominated Jeffrey Rush, who is on the Banned Men list, along with almost everybody else on earth except Pat Kernan.
God, let him not do anything between now and when this episode
please
drops.
Please
do you guys know what time it is?
Kind of Banned Men.
Close. It's game time.
Yay!
All right, welcome to Game Time. This is the fourth Game Time of the season. Let me remind you of our standings. It is Tara 2, Valued Guests 1, and Sarah still looking to get on the board. Today we are playing Starcrossed from Dan Casino.
Hey!
Who earns himself an extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot great mini topic of his choosing. He writes, there is a long, proud history of crossovers between TV shows, even if many of the crossovers make absolutely no sense. In this game, you'll be given the description of a TV episode, and you'll have to guess what show crossed over with it, with extra points awarded if you can name one of the characters who crossed over. There are 30 questions plus a tiebreaker. Actually, scratch that. There are 28 questions plus a tiebreaker. But I'm doing it a little differently. You guys are teaming up.
Oh.
Oh.
All right. So it's going to be Fug Girls versus Extra Hot Great Gang.
Work-wise versus work-wise. I get it.
I apologize in advance.
But I will also say, FYI, the valued guests have two steel meals. So if Sarah or I screws up and you know the answer, you can jump in and say steel meal before Dave says what the answer is, and you can steal the point.
Okay. That is correct. And this is a regulation game. If Value Guests win, they get 2 points. And if the Extra Hot Great Gang, they both get a point. This is still a game that needs to be won. The stakes are still high.
Done.
Let's throw it to Picky to see who's going to go first.
We will start with Valued Guest.
Okay, the Fug Girls are going first. Are we ready to play Starcrossed?
Yes.
Yes.
All right.
Let's do it.
Here we go. Question number one, About a Boy, season 2, episode 10. That was from 2015. Here we go. Lead series Will Freeman works out some of his anxieties over his neighbor's son's upcoming bar mitzvah with his regular poker group. Given his musical background, it makes sense that the group would include a recording engineer from another NBC show running at the same time and set in the Bay Area. Your answer should be the name of the show you think crossed over with this episode About a Boy and one of the characters, if there in fact is more than one, sometimes it's just one character that crosses over from this episode.
Dave said lead series. I think he meant series lead.
Oh, did I?
Yeah.
It's Spoonerisms.
It's got to be Parenthood, and it's got to be Dax Shepard's character, right? It's Crosby.
You are correct.
Good job, Heather.
That is 2 points.
Woo! Thank you. I watched that one. Nice. It was bad.
I did not know that one.
I
Okay.
I didn't know the show, but yeah,
well done.
Thank you, Dave.
This is question number two for Tara and Sarah. The show Alice, season 8, episode 1 from 1983. A sheriff and his deputy from another show end up at Mel's Diner and try to buy the place for reasons that are never fully explained. The episode ends when the sheriff's car is filled with cement.
Wow. A fucking sheriff? I have no idea. Sarah, what do you think?
I think it's got to be Dukes of Hazzard, right?
Yeah,
right?
That makes sense. Sure, Dukes of Hazzard. And who is the sheriff?
Oh, God.
Enos?
No, that's the deputy.
No, just to remind you, you only have to name one of the characters.
Okay.
Three is people it, show up, sometimes four people show up.
Is it Roscoe P. Coltrane? Is that the sheriff?
I'm going to give you a point right now for Dukes of Hazzard, just to put you out of your misery.
All right.
All right. And yes, and that's
one
Roscoe.
Of the characters.
Okay.
Roscoe P. Coltrane?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm. Damn it.
Boss Hogg and Enos arrive.
Sorry, T-Bone.
I never would have gotten that.
Why would Enos go anywhere? Come on.
Maybe
they could afford him.
Maybe Boss Hogg was on a road trip to drop Enos off in LA for his spinoff show, Enos?
Oh, yeah, maybe. Oh, God. Oh, God.
Baywatch, season 2, episode 16, guys, from 1992.
God, don't. Yeah, no.
Eddie and Shawnee are helping a stranded jet skier when the two find the stars of a much older show stranded on a deserted island that's apparently right by the coast. Later, they all get stranded on yet another deserted island that's also right off the coast.
That's amazing. Did you
Catalina,
watch this?
Catalini, and Catalino.
I have a guess.
I have not so long ago watched all of Baywatch in syndication and apparently was not at my desk that
day. This is why I thought you might know.
I'm very sad about it. What would your guess be, Jess?
I mean, my guess is Gilligan's Island.
They said much older show.
It seems thematic with the islands, and we know that Baywatch is not very subtle.
Don't say that. Don't malign the program. I'll go with you because I was gone that day.
Oh my God!
Oh, Jessica!
Amazing.
Who do we think it was?
I mean, we could make a random guess.
Well, Gilligan?
It's got to be Gilligan, right? He's alive.
Sure.
Let's say Gilligan.
Yay!
Hey. Right. Oh, wow. Gilligan and
Jessica
and Marianne were on that.
Oh, yeah. I was like, honey. I don't know who the other one's going to be, but Gilligan seems
well
obvious.
Done.
I'm so proud.
You nailed it.
All right, well done. Question number four, Benson, season 5, episode 3, 1983.
Thanks, Vicky.
Everyone thinks that Benson has been working too hard when he starts to have hallucinations of a former employer. At first, we're led to believe that she's a ghost, but it turns out she's in a coma in South America. Benson does nothing to help her, but she says that she'll figure it out.
Okay, it's Soap, right? Former employer, that's Soap.
Guess.
So I'm going to say Jessica is the crossover because that was his boss. Hey!
Nice. Wow. Well done.
Bones, season 4, episode 25 from 2009. Booth develops a brain tumor, which leads him to hallucinate an animated character from another Fox show who tells him he's not man enough to be the sperm donor for Brennan's baby.
Oh, my
wow,
God.
Wow. I thought I was watching it season 4. Did you remember this, Heather?
No. Fox, it's got to be a Fox animated show, probably, right?
Animated character from another Fox show.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, he said that. Okay. So,
I mean,
it could be a Simpson or a Family Guy. It sounds kind of like the thing a douchey Family Guy character would do.
Sure, I can buy that.
He's not man. Do we think it's like Stewie the baby from Family Guy?
Oh, yeah, that's a good guess. Oh my God, good job.
Yes and yes.
Family Guy, and that was Stewie.
Well done.
Oh.
Well played.
We figured that one out. Good job,
Hack. Hatred of Seth MacFarlane comes in handy.
Charlie's Angels, season 4, episode 1 from 79. Mm-hmm. Dick Sargent hires the Angels to recover a bunch of stolen art from a thief who has fled to the Caribbean. Thankfully, they all take the slowest conveyance possible, so everything works out, and the Angels hang out in bikinis a lot.
Okay, so it's got to be Love Boat.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
Captain's, who would we guess that was in it? Captain Stubing, probably all of them. So let's just say Captain Stubing.
Yeah, Captain Stubing's a good guess.
Okay.
You're correct. Hey. The whole cast was in that episode. They're set on the Love Boat.
Nice.
All right. Going back to the Fug Girls. Question 7, Community, season 2, episode 19 from 2011. This one's a little meta. Abed creates a Facebook fan page for his favorite show, and the producers of said show are so thrilled with it that he's invited onto the set for a walk-on role. He is thus in the background, staring at the characters of that show while they're concerned with, among other things, their friend's Hawaiian substitute for Big Carl.
I saw this one too.
Well, I have no idea.
I'm having...
A lot of this hinges on your knowledge of Big Carl.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know.
Who the F is Big Carl? What channel is
Community? I don't
know,
because I almost just mixed him up with Big Mike, and that's a different thing. Community was NBC.
Okay.
Yep.
And he's in the background, of a show.
Yeah, he creates a fan page for this show, gets a walk-on role. He's in the background, staring at the characters of that show while they're concerned with their friend's Hawaiian substitute for Big Carl.
The friend's Hawaiian substitute for Big Carl.
Wow, that is like word salad to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like...
If you don't know the show, yeah.
Yeah, I don't...
Well, take a guess.
Try to think what NBC shows were even on then. Son of a... I don't know. Any show you want.
We
we'll
have
to...
One.
Yeah.
I'm going to put you out of your misery because it's not even an NBC show.
It's Cougar Town.
It's Cougar Town.
Oh, God.
Big Carl is her giant wine glass.
Her wine glass. We were never going to get that.
Never.
Okay, back to the Extra Hot Great Gang. Diagnosis Murder, Season 4, Episode 16, 1996. Dr. Mark Sloan, that is the lead on Diagnosis Murder, not the Grey's Anatomy character, is accused of murder and has to call in an old, emphasis on the old, friend to defend him in court. Wait. If you don't answer it with the right inflection, you do not get the points.
Oh my God.
It's Murder, She Wrote, right?
Are you asking me, Sarah? Or Sarah?
I'm asking my teammate, Sarah.
I would have guessed Matlock.
Oh, then you are right.
And
is that
Matlock.
Then it's Matlock.
Thought we were going to steal that for a second.
No.
That is worth 2 points. Matlock and Matlock. I assume that you meant Matlock.
Woo. Yes.
All right, guys. You don't have to feel left out. Here's a Diagnosis Murder question for you.
Great. All right. Hey. That's really.
Oh, thank God. I'm so ready.
Season 5, next season, episode 10, 97, an associate of Dr. Mark Sloan, remember, not the Grey's Anatomy character, finds out that his father is a spy and is being hunted down. Ooh. Among the suspects, a retired spy who reprises her character from a 1960s series.
Ugh. Ooh, a 1960s lady spy.
Old do you think I am?
Just
Were the mod? Was it the Mod Squad? Yeah, were they spies or no?
Yeah.
Or the Emma Peel was the other one?
Yeah, I was going to say
Avengers.
That's Diana Rigg, right? But what show is that?
Yeah.
So your answer? Your answer is the Avengers.
Well, I don't know. Is that what we're going with?
Is it? I have no idea. Sure. Yes. Yes.
Was that the 60s? Yeah.
Who was it?
That's a good
what
guess. The answer is Mission Impossible.
And
your character is
forgot about that show.
Cinnamon Carter, which is a fantastic name.
Never would have gotten that.
No, okay. That's a tough one. Question number 10, The Donna Reed Show. Oh, the Donna Reed Show, season 3, episode 3. I don't even know what that
is.
Sorry. Donna has
my favorite show.
Yeah, Donna has to recreate the entire house after buying a new armchair that makes the rest of the furniture look drab. Oh. Things get complicated, though, when one of the kids in the neighborhood, who's a real troublemaker, comes over to help. He causes so much mischief that Donna has to get her next-door neighbor, an old guy with expertise wrangling the kid, to deal with him.
It's got to be Dennis the Menace, right? And it's Dennis. Yes.
Dennis.
Yes.
The Menace.
That is correct.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes, correct. Yeah. Okay, 2 points.
But we only get to, don't get an extra point.
Yeah, I was just curious if you knew Mr. Wilson's name.
Yeah, I've read a comic.
Early Edition, Season 2, Episode 15, Heather and Jessica.
Oh, my God.
1998.
Okay.
Why?
It's not about the show. It's about who's crossed over with the show, guys. It's not about the show.
All right.
I'm just going to guess Cinnamon Carter for everything.
Gary's friend Marissa is cursed when she wears earrings that her boyfriend stole from an exhibit of Egyptian artifacts at a local museum. She falls ill and has to be rushed to a local hospital where guest star doctors are able to save her. All right, one little bit of information. Gary, who gets the next day's issue of the Chicago Sun-Times.
Oh.
A little bit of set dressing there.
Yeah. It's Chicago Hope, then.
Yeah, it's got to be.
Yay!
I don't remember who was on Chicago Hope, because I watched
ER. Three characters in this crossover. Three characters crossed over.
Mandy Patinkin, right?
One of the Arkins was on it, and I never know which Arkin was which. And A dot Arkin was on it.
Was Christine Lottie on it? But we don't know their names. I never watched that show.
I'm going to grade you on a sliding scale. If you can tell me, like, you know, the actor who played this, the chief doctor or something, I might give you the point, depending on how I feel when you say those words.
I don't remember when Patinkin crapped out on Chicago Hope.
I mean, I don't know.
It's got to be one of the
Is your answer
right?
The Patink?
Yeah, let's go with
Patink. Is
Patinkin.
It the Patink or the Arkin?
Oh.
You wanted Hector Elizondo.
Oh, he's in everything.
That's probably the most recognizable
the unsung
name.
What about
hero.
Kronk?
Kronk?
He puts the hope in Chicago.
Yeah, that was Peter Berg. I got to say, cursed earrings from an Egyptian exhibit sounds like it's right up both your alleys.
It really does.
I also thought it was going to be the Brady Bunch.
Isn't it basically the plot of Desperately Seeking Susan? Mm.
Does sound like a Brady Bunch episode.
It was Brady Bunchy for sure.
All right, The Flintstones, season 6, episode 6 from 65. A couple from a contemporary non-animated sitcom move next door to Fred and Wilma. They go on a camping trip together, and when Fred and Barney claim that the women can't rough it like the men do, they get into a battle of the sexes. The female newcomer secretly uses her powers to give the women the win.
Bewitched. And what was her name? Samantha.
You are correct. All right. Number 13, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Okay.
Season 5, episode 17. Will and his girlfriend Lisa go to couples counseling as part of an effort to get Uncle Phil to pay for their vacation. There they meet another bickering couple from a beloved sitcom of the past. Will and the husband start exchanging insults about the guest starring wife until Will goes too far and gets the guy mad. Couple from a sitcom of the past.
Famous bickering couple. Mm. I mean,
I don't know.
Every sitcom couple ever.
I know.
Are famous bickering couples.
The Jeffersons bicker?
Oh, that's a good guess. I'll go with that. Sure. They did bicker.
Did they?
Oh, hey. Good job.
So then I guess, was Willie Ames Mr. Jefferson? Am I right about that?
I don't think so.
I've never seen the word salad.
I don't know what that meant at all.
I would say that Mr. and Mrs. Jefferson were the guest stars.
Oh, I thought we had to do the actor. I'm sorry. I forgot about that. Yeah.
We got it.
It's Sherman Helmsley.
I'm making this too hard. Thank you. Who's Willie Ames?
He's from Charles Charles. He's white with curly hair. He's Bible man.
Sorry.
Oh, see, I didn't watch any of those shows. I don't know. I don't know who any of those people are. I'm sorry.
Well, you got the sitcom.
Number 14, bring us into our score break here at the halfway mark. Four extra hot, great team.
The important thing is you got it right.
Full House.
I guess.
Would have been a much different show. Full House, season 4, episode 16, 1991.
Yep.
When Stephanie Tanner has to get glasses, she's worried that the other kids will tease her. Thankfully, a cousin of one of her friends who's visiting from out of town comes by to make her feel better about wearing glasses and being herself, regardless of what others might think.
Well, who wore glasses that was on TGIF? Is it Steve Urkel from Family Matters?
It's got to be the Urk.
Okay, that's my guess.
2 points.
Hey!
Correct. And now the scores, please.
Well, it's still very close. Heather and Jessica have 9 points. Sarah and I have 13.
Okay, that means...
It's not that close.
Opportunity to completely tie it up.
Yeah.
Oops.
Let's end that score break music. Okay, stop it. There we go. Okay, this is how it works, guys. I'm holding in my hands a Trivial Pursuit TV box question from the mid-90s. That means the shows that are answers are from the mid-90s and further back. I will ask you these questions. If you get three correct, you get those 4 points. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right.
From the classics category, he says, as he turns on his lamp so that he can read the cards, because we all know
Dave Cole is an old man.
Here we go. What 50s lawyer did Fred McMurray and Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. want to play? Wanted to play him, didn't get the role.
50s lawyer.
50s lawyer.
Perry Mason?
Hey!
There you go.
Hey! All right, from the sitcom category, what sitcom sees William Frawley as a father-in-law dubbed Bub?
Oh my God, I have no idea.
What is the year again? I'm sorry.
There is no year.
It doesn't say year. Just says sitcom.
What sitcom sees William Frawley as a father-in-law dubbed Bub?
I don't have a guess. You, Jess?
I have a couple of foggiest.
I don't know who that is. Married with Children.
That is my three sons.
Oh, God, that is old.
As far as I know, we're not indentured, but that is not the title of the show. Drama. What pirate did Charlton Heston play in the TNT made-for-cable movie Treasure Island?
Wow. I got to see that on the YouTube.
God, love that movie. And I never watched it with him.
Well, who's the pirate of Treasure Island?
I don't know. I've never read it. Something Beard.
Don't remember.
Long John Silver. No.
Blackbeard? I don't have any idea.
Sure.
Blackbeard?
Blackbeard?
Yeah.
Oh, you guys are going to hate this. It's Long John Silver.
God, our pirate lore is weak.
I didn't stick with it.
Yep.
I'm still really thrown off by the great Willie Ames controversy. I just can't.
All right, you got three questions left, of which you need two.
All right.
Here we go. Kids and Games is the category. What kids show theme song bellowed, "Here we come a marching and a shouting merrily"? Not sung to the tune.
These are hard.
What kids show theme song bellowed, "Here we come a marching and a shouting merrily"?
I don't know the answer to that either, Jess. I'm sorry.
No, I have no idea. Pass.
The Mickey Mouse Club.
I've never seen that either.
It must be like the fifth verse or something.
Pressure's on. Right? Need both of these.
Yeah.
Here's Stars. This is all about the celebrities. What 50s comedian did Orson Welles dub the Great One? What an endorsement.
Son of a bitch.
Jesus Christ.
Did Orson Welles dub the Great One?
Who's a 50s comedian?
Just trying to put myself in Orson Welles' mind frame.
No, known as the Great One up until Wayne Gretzky appeared on the scene.
No, I'm going to try to method answer this one. I couldn't even name you. I'm like blanking on 50s comedians.
I'll give you one hint.
Jess, I'm so sorry. Okay.
Sitcom pioneer. Sitcom pioneer.
Dick Van Dyke.
Do we think he's not a sexist? And he said Lucille Ball.
Maybe.
Sure. Let's go with the girl.
Jackie Gleason.
He was a sexist. Jackie Gleason.
Sense. Yeah. All right. Well, a good try.
Sorry, guys.
Sorry.
It wasn't, though, was it?
Back
that
to the game.
Good.
Oh, yeah. Jackie Gleason. Back to the game.
I bitterly hate the 1950s right now.
This is Heather and Jessica.
Yep.
Okay.
Hanging with Mr. Cooper.
Okay.
Season 1, episode 2 from 92. Mr. Cooper is hurt while on a substitute teaching gig in San Francisco and hurts himself while trying to get the first grade class under control. One of the students, a precocious little girl from another show, and her uncle come over to his house afterwards to apologize.
I mean, San Francisco and a precocious student, is that Full House?
Yeah, that'd be my guess.
Michelle Tanner, right?
Well done.
They all did right, a crossover nice. In episode 2. Come on, Hanging with Mr. Cooper. Have some dignity.
Oh, wow. Man. Settle down.
Good job.
Right. We're making it. We're crawling back.
God.
Ah, Herman's Head, guys. Herman's Head, season. Great. Oh, my God. Season 3? That lasted 3 seasons at
what?
Least?
It did?
Episode 4.
Okay.
From 93.
Yep.
Herman is trying to impress his date with his non-existent wit. So the character representing his intellect hires 2 joke writers from a classic sitcom to punch up his dialogue.
I'm going to guess this is probably, I mean, how many shows have joke writers, right? This is probably Dick Van Dyke Show, right? It had joke Maybe. Writers?
Sure. I don't have another answer, so I support you.
Okay. Hey. Yeah. Oh. So then it's, let's say, Carl Reiner?
That's what I would say.
I don't know what his...
No.
I don't know what his character's name was, so let's hope that Dick Van Dyke was one of them and say Rob.
You needed either Sally or Buddy.
Buddy was
That's Rosemary and Maury okay. Amsterdam playing Rose. I mean, Sally and Buddy. Close. Rats. All right, good. Number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Spread Eagle.
Law and Order, Criminal Intent, Season 7, Episode 12 from 2008. A celebrity gossip columnist is murdered, and a deputy U.S. Marshal tasked with protecting people in the federal witness relocation program investigates, leading her to New York.
I mean, I feel like it must be crossing over with regular Law and Order, right? I said that very haltingly.
I don't know. Was there she's a deputy U.S. Marshal, you said?
Yeah, I'll read that again for you. A celebrity gossip columnist is murdered. A deputy U.S. Marshal is tasked with protecting who is usually tasked with protecting people in the federal witness relocation program investigates leading her to New York. Leading her to New York.
Oh, okay. They're not going to New York. It's the Marshal.
What year was this? I'm sorry,
2008.
2008. I was saying the only show I know of that had a lady U.S. Marshal and witness protection was In Plain Sight, but that seems insane.
I have no guess.
Then I guess In Plain Sight.
Oh my god!
Go ahead. So then it was, you're going to knock yourself out of it.
Mary.
Mary Shannon.
Yeah.
Well done,
well
Madame.
Done.
Thank you.
That was impressive. Mad About You, Season 3, Episode 16 from 1995. Paul Gus, the star of a legendary TV show, the creation of which was itself the subject of a classic TV show, to narrate a documentary about the making of the show, but the old guy turns out to be terribly egotistical, screwing up the doc.
This is Dick Van Dyke Show again, and it is 100% Carl Reiner, and I mixed whether he said that his guy's name was Buddy, but that's all I know.
That's good enough. Alan Brady, Carl Reiner okay. played Alan
nice.
Brady. This is question. Looky, looky here. It's Murder, She Wrote, Season 3, Episode 8, 1996.
Still my heart.
Do you guys want to answer Sight Unseen?
No.
Okay. Jessica takes time off from her cruise.
I feel like that was a big compliment, though.
Jessica takes time off her cruise ship vacation to help a private detective who's been framed for murder after a shootout with a hired gunman. And let me just say, I know this one. Me.
You want to answer?
An
it
idiot.
Just kidding. a private detective. Who had private detectives on TV besides Columbo?
That know. Dave would know.
From that 1986.
All right.
Our heart-to-heart private detectives?
Oh. It's, oh my God, I almost said Matlock. That's not Magnum, right?
Oh, wait, yeah, that makes sense.
Say the answer. Say the answer like you were saying Matlock.
Magnum!
And so, the character name is, get ready, wait for it, Magnum.
Correct for 2 points. Yes.
Played by Willie Ames on Earth 2.
I have actually seen that one. It's really good.
Season 5, Episode 18 of The Nanny from 1998.
Yep.
Recently engaged Fran goes to her high school reunion where she finds that all of her old friends are getting divorced. Among her old high school friends, it is the lead of another sitcom who actually went to high school with Fran Drescher on Long Island in real life.
Ooh. Oh, God. What other shows had people from Long Island in that era?
Oh, shit.
What's season 5, right?
Season 5, 1898.
98.
Among her old high school friends, it is the lead character of another sitcom who actually went to high school with her in real life.
Oh, my God. Sarah, what did you say? Sorry.
Everybody Loves Raymond, King of Queens. Was Raymond on yet?
Yeah, Raymond was on, but do we think that he went to high school with Fran Drescher? Maybe he did.
No, I mean,
they were both on CBS. I don't have a better guess, so let's go with that. Yeah, Everybody Loves Raymond. Yeah. Hey, Sarah!
Whoa, nice.
And okay, so then take a guess of the first name of this character.
It's Ray Barone.
Oh. Number 21, and here's a good show job, everybody Sarah. Can get behind. Nightman, Season 2, Episode 6. From 1998.
Oh, season 2, that show we Nightman. All remember and love.
From 1998.
Oh, I quit after season 1.
But guys, this gets so much better. You have no fucking idea.
Oh, no.
No.
And I think maybe we have to watch this episode later on. Nightman, the jazz musician superhero,
fuck
who
off.
Is also an insomniac that can sense evil. Are you with me so far?
Yes.
Is confronted by none other than a time-traveling Jack the Ripper.
I quit.
Who has targeted the daughter of a TV action hero from a short-lived 80s show. The two heroes team up and find that the 80s hero's daughter has inherited his powers, making her ripe for a spinoff that never happens because we live in a fallen world.
Oh, my God.
This sounds fucking terror-amazing.
Wow, that sounds unbelievably bad.
Hilarable. Totally.
Exceptional. Okay.
I'm so confused. Speaking of word salad.
Okay, Nightman is a jazz musician superhero and an insomniac. He's dealing with Jack the Ripper, who is time-traveled. And Jack the Ripper has targeted the daughter of a TV action hero from an 80s show.
Action hero, not superhero. Okay.
Yeah, action hero.
We're action heroes in
but
the 80s.
She's inherited his powers.
His
so.
Powers.
So
yes.
There are powers.
But what
so
powers
it's not like
are
there
they?
Are
well, I'm wondering if it's, does MacGyver have a daughter?
I was going to
he have powers?
Well, he can make anything out of anything.
Right? I mean, that's powerful.
Would they have tried to make a TV show about girl child MacGyver?
I mean, they made Nightman, so I'm not really sure
what other,
why
like,
we think they have taste.
Would they, Greatest American Hero have had a child? No. I don't know about
I that. Never, I don't know when that was on.
80s, but it was only on for like a season.
This isn't going to help their memories at all.
Isn't it?
Is this worse than jazz?
Do you have an answer?
I mean,
I don't know, because
I'll go for
MacGyver.
Sure.
Yeah. The answer is so much better, guys.
Okay.
Oh, no.
Manimal.
No!
Oh, my God.
To recap, the show is Nightman. He is a jazz musician superhero and also an insomniac who senses evil. He's fighting a time-traveling Jack the Ripper who has targeted Manimal's daughter. And this,
my God.
Oh, that's brilliant.
I first of all, Nightman got into season 2.
No.
That's the season 2 episode. Yeah. Second of all, worthy enough for a backdoor pilot attempt. There's
that's
so
amazing.
Much happening
wow.
in this question.
We have to watch this immediately.
Christ.
All right.
I want to know who played Nightman. Like, was it anyone who's done anything since then?
Oh, I'm looking it up to see whether Nightman is streamable. Is it just spelled the way I think
yeah,
it?
Yeah, Nightman, one word. Yep.
This calls for a reboot. Why are they not remaking Nightman?
Oh my God, you guys have to see his costume. It's on Amazon and iTunes for purchase.
Ugh,
and I feel like we should do it for our next episode as a Worse Than Jazz episode, as a segment, because we have to know.
Maybe we should tag it onto that weird canon episode we're going to do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
It'll
fine
be like the outlier. Okay.
I'm into it.
Look forward to that, peoples. Number 22, Roseanne, Season 9, Episode 7.
Yes.
Roseanne, Jackie, and Nancy visit New York City, where they meet celebrities and are invited to Martha's Vineyard. There they get really, really drunk with two women visiting from England who call everyone darling.
Oh.
It's absolutely fabulous. Yep. And
Patsy.
So it's... Yep.
Good enough. Yep. Both of them. And a Dean. Number 23.
Season 9 that no one ever wants to watch again. It's terrible.
Number 23 for the Fug Girls, Sleepy Hollow, Season 3, okay. Episode 5 from 2015.
Damn it. I might know this one without it, but keep going.
Okay, go. No, answer it. Answer it, but I won't hold you to it unless you're right.
I mean, my guess was Bones, but...
Yeah. Hey! Oh my God, way to go, Heather.
Recapped it.
But I don't remember necessarily. I think Bones was one of them.
Correct.
Well done.
Both the leads nice. Were in this yeah. Sleepy
that was
Hollow.
Impressive. Yeah.
I'll just read you the first yeah. line of the summary. General Howe and his soldiers are reanimated as zombies.
Yeah.
And then Bones.
Of course. And then Bones.
Naturally. That makes sense.
Number 24 for mm-hmm. Extra Hot Great. Yes. South Park, Season 2, Episode 8. Mr. Garrison travels to New York to seek psychiatric. Thank you. Help from another Comedy Central cartoon character who is disturbingly non-squiggily drawn in his appearance here.
Dr. Katz, professional therapist, and Dr. Katz.
Sure. All right. Number 25, Saint Elsewhere, Season 3. Episode 4 from 91, Dr. Westfall and two of his colleagues wind up at a familiar bar, which is weirdly missing some of the folks who are usually there, and Westfall announces that he's quitting medicine. Also, a guy at a Celtics game gets literally crucified. Wow.
Wow, that sounds like a
Boston
hell of a
fans
night
are
out.
Rough.
Shit. I know.
I mean,
that sounds
gotta,
intense for Cheers.
I was going to say, it's got to be Cheers, right? Who do we think was on it?
I mean,
Sam.
So sure.
But here's the question.
It said usually there.
Before you answer,
go ahead.
And I don't want to sway you anyway, but just as you know, as a exercise. If the whole cast is not involved, what is the caliber of the cast member that sticks
right,
behind
you're
for
right,
a crossover?
You're right.
What dregs did they get?
Who did they keep there?
George Wendt.
Sure, that'd be my guess. Or- Norm.
There was three: Carla, Norm, and Cliff.
Sorry.
Which is
of
like
course.
The perfect.
I was gonna say Cliff's coming.
Yeah,
on.
That's yeah. the tier you get. Yep.
Sorry, Norm.
All right, number 26, Step by Step, Season 1, Episode 2, another second episode
good
crossover.
Jesus.
Wow, you guys get a
thirsty
grip.
Tomboy daughter Al asks the hunky pitcher of her baseball team to the Sadie Hawkins dance. He agrees, but dumps her when someone else asks him out. She decides to go to the dance anyways and takes the special guest star from another TGIF show who literally crashed into her house with a jetpack after somehow flying in from Chicago.
I think once again, it's our old friend Urkel. Right, Sarah, probably?
I can't imagine who else it is.
Okay, Family Matters, Urkel. Man, they really, like, they wrung him out on TGIF.
Poor okay, so that was
Jaleel White.
Hanging Mr. Cooper, Season 1, Episode 2, 92. Mm-hmm. And this was 91. So having Step by Step got the Urkel bump, they decided next year to give it to Mr. Cooper.
For sure.
That's what I'm seeing. Okay, everybody's yep. last question coming up.
Okay.
All right.
Third Watch, Season 3, Episode 20 from 2002. The Third Watch crew help a doctor who's flown in from Chicago, parentheses, it's not Urkel, because she's afraid that her sister might be back on the crack, putting her niece in jeopardy. When they find the sister, she's overdosed and they have to rush to save her life.
I remember this one.
That is ER and Susan Lewis.
Yep. You are correct for 2 points.
I remember that
well
one.
Well done.
All right, last question of the game.
I mean, who else's sister was on the crack? We knew.
Honestly.
Right? Yeah.
2.5 Men, Season 9, Episode 1 from 2011. Mm-hmm. After Charlie Harper is killed, spoiler, his brother is looking to sell off the house. Among the potential buyers, a bickering couple from a previous Chuck Lorre series who sees the house and dare each other to file for divorce, with the wife saying that she'll take his bourgeoisie family for all they have.
Bourgeois. I saw this.
Uh-oh.
It's Dharma and Greg.
You are correct. All right,
good
let's
job,
hear
T-Bone.
Them scores.
Thank you.
This was stayed a close game throughout. Heather and Jessica had 21. Sarah and I finished with 25.
All right. I mean, that's pretty dominant. Yeah. Nicely done.
That was good.
Congratulations.
You guys want to play a tiebreaker for shits and giggles and a steel meal?
Sure.
Let's make it two steel meals in case.
Okay.
Yeah, so we can divide it equitably. Answer as soon as you think you know. All right. First person to shout out the answer, which will be the show, gets two steel meals, either for value guests or one apiece for Tara and Sarah. Are we ready?
Okay.
Yep. Yes.
A shadowy group resurrects four of its own members as zombies in an attempt to somehow bring the apocalypse at the dawn of the new century. Mulder and Scully enlist a former member of the group in order to stop them, which just happens to tie up loose ends from said former's member own recently canceled show. What's that show?
Millennium?
Is it Lone Gunman?
Oh, Millennium!
Hey! Wow, nice.
The other one.
That's Frank Black from Millennium, placed right. by...
I was like, I don't remember this being a Lone Gunman, but see, I forgot Millennium existed.
I'm not sure how I'm going to do this. I guess I'll just do it this way.
Well done, everybody.
Yay! Oh,
that was fun. Thank you, Dan Casino. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. The Royal We took a reserved and sensible look at The Crown and then examined the unreserved and nonsensical new show Happy. We went around the dial with stops at Married at First Sight, Encore, Mindy Project, Vanderpump Rules, American Vandal, and Norseman. And Tara conducted herself poorly in her unsuccessful can of bitch, crazy ex-girlfriend, I'm going on a date with Josh's friend. I'm sorry, Tara. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and the Extra Hot Great team was the winner of this week's game time. Remember.
We're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
Yeah, I finished a bunch.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Right, gloves on.
Jessica Morgan.
I forgot I had to say something here.
And Heather Cox.
Willie Ames forever.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Thank you. This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.